The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I'm Sonia Usach Kuhn of the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Community Connections. Every month, we will introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. Our guests today are unique. They are Nancy Goodman Torpe and Peter Torpe, our first married couple. So let me introduce each of you to our audience. Nancy Goodman Torpe is a retired research physicist, and along with Peter Torpe, co-hosts and co-produces Eyes on Success, a weekly half-hour audio show about products, services, and other items of interest to people with vision loss or other print impairment. Nancy grew up on Long Island, got her undergraduate degree with honors in astronomy and physics at Bryn Mawr College, and her PhD in physics at the University of Chicago. This was followed by a postdoctoral fellowship at the Max Planck Institute in Stuttgart, Germany. Nancy spent her career in corporate research at Xerox Corporation in Rochester, New York. Her research focused mainly on modeling of the xerographic process and image processing with the aim of evaluating and improving the quality of prints. Over the years, she was awarded the Excellence in Science and Technology Award, once as an individual and again as part of a team. She spent 5 years as a manager and retired as a principal scientist. She holds 16 patents, including 2 jointly with Peter. She is fully sighted. Following retirement in 2005, Nancy has participated in many volunteer activities, including teaching science lessons in the local elementary school and serving on the board of their local land trust. She was a volunteer reader with their local radio reading service. After the director suggested that she and Peter start their own weekly show, they created Eyes on Success. They've been airing weekly shows since 2011 with over 500 unique episodes in their searchable archive of shows. And now Peter. Peter Torpe was born with congenital glaucoma in the early 1950s and attended a school for the blind through fifth grade. Despite many eye surgeries, he maintained enough vision to be able to read by holding printed material just inches from his face and did not use any mobility aids. Fortunately, his parents taught him to read and write print since he was later mainstreamed through high school. Peter always enjoyed science and math as a youth and went on to graduate Phi Beta Kappa from Union College with a BS in physics. The week after graduation, however, yet another surgical procedure left Peter totally blind. Determined to take advantage of a fellowship that he was awarded to attend graduate school at the University of Virginia, Peter spent the following summer relearning his Braille skills, as well as learning to navigate with a cane for the first time. Over the next months, Peter's vision cleared somewhat, and he was able to make use of a CCTV recorded books from what was then Recordings for the Blind, now Learning Ally. Peter's colleagues helped him recording chapters of his textbooks until they were available from Recordings for the Blind. And Peter graduated with a PhD in engineering physics. Well, now here's the interesting part. After graduate school, Peter joined Xerox Corporation's Research Center in Rochester, New York, where he developed computer models for next-generation printers. In 1995, he was awarded Xerox's President's Award for the unique tools he developed to aid in the design of new printers. And he became Xerox's youngest research fellow. And despite being totally blind once again by that time, managed a team responsible for creating the image processing algorithms and print quality specifications for Xerox's inkjet printers. He holds 20 patents. A week after arriving at Xerox, Nancy met Peter Torpe. They actually first met socially as part of an American tradition dance group known as Contra Dancing. Coincidentally, wound up working closely at Xerox and riding in the same carpool until they were married the next year. 38 years later, they have two adult children and two grandchildren. They no longer Contra Dance, but they share many other common interests and stay active, walking and hiking around their home in Golden, Colorado, at the foot of the Rocky Mountains, socializing with friends and traveling, and Nancy enjoys gourmet vegetarian cooking. Peter has also enjoyed playing, writing, and listening to music through the years. In Rochester, he played piano for the Peter Torpe's Trio, a jazz combo that performed for many senior facilities in the area. Their Eyes on Success radio podcast show covers a wide variety of topics of interest to the visually impaired, and those topics will be discussed as soon as we start talking with them. So welcome, Nancy and Peter. We are delighted that you can join us and share your exceptional professionalism, talents, and skills with our listeners.
Thank you. We look forward to it.
Okay. Now, since you've been married for 38 years, did you encounter any particular obstacles due to the blindness and used humor to get through it?
We use humor to get through pretty much everything. The first obstacle was when I told my parents I wanted to marry Pete. And my mom said, "Why would you want to marry a blind man?"
And you said?
We get some of that.
Okay.
But once they get to know him, they learn he's actually a pretty good guy.
He must be, with all that background and music. So let's continue.
Well, you know, I think, interestingly, Nancy is very organized and very careful about where she places things and very considerate of my situation. And she rolls with it very well. So we get along very well in that regard.
Well,
and, you know,
that's good news. All right.
It
so
certainly is.
Let us continue with the fascinating subject of physics, of which I know nothing. What was it for each of you that attracted you to physics? Nancy?
You know, when I was young, I was always playing mathematical games and puzzles. My dad had a background in chemistry, so he, I wouldn't say pushed me into those things, but, you know, he was always available to answer questions. And I consider myself very lucky that as I continued having that fun doing mathematical games and puzzles, eventually I was employed to do that. So someone actually paid me to have that kind of enjoyment.
That's the best kind of a job, to get paid for doing what you like.
Oh, absolutely. And my interest stemmed from much the same thing. You know, as a kid, I was fascinated by mathematics, you know, starting with arithmetic, because in grade school, what kind of mathematics do you do? And eventually the mathematics got a little too abstract for my taste, and physics is applying mathematics to understanding the real world. You know, why do things behave the way they do? And we both loved our jobs. We had so much fun exploring new concepts and working out the details.
There are some laws in physics, aren't there?
What was the question again?
I say, sorry. Aren't there some laws in physics? Like,
well, you know, that's what I thought made physics easy. When I think of learning history and you have to memorize all these dates and names and events, there's a lot to memorize and a lot to know. When I think of learning physics, basically, you start out with F equals ma, one of the simplest equations, and you can derive so much of physics from just a couple of equations.
Well, what does that mean, F equals ma?
So it was Isaac Newton in the 1600s or so, you know, said force equals mass times acceleration. If you push on something, it's going to move proportional to its mass. And just knowing a few simple things and having the tools of mathematics, it's incredible how much of the world you can describe and investigate. And it really makes it kind of fun. It's like unraveling a puzzle. It's like you're learning all the time.
Is it something like what goes up must come down?
Well, exactly. Because in that so the force equals mass times acceleration. If you have an object that has a certain mass, or more colloquially weight, although they're not identical properties, if you know all of the forces acting on that object, that's all the Fs.
So
you can figure out where it's going to go and how fast. And that's kind of the A.
Okay.
So what goes up must come down is exactly that. You throw up an object and gravity is acting on it and it comes back down.
Look at that. I know physics.
There you go.
Who thought I would be learning that today? Well, thank you. So in other words, if I put my foot on the accelerator when the car is turned on and I push down on the pedal, it's going to go forward.
I hope so.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right.
You know, what's interesting is there is so much physics and technology involved in today's world and everyday things. And, you know, we've never said that everybody has to be a physicist or a scientist. But if you think of the technology that we're involved with every day, having an appreciation of what goes into that and how it works is really kind of helpful.
I guess so. I'm not very technical. I'm not labeled a techie in any sense of the word. I can work my phone and my computer, and that's about it.
But that's pretty much all you need to get by.
I'm getting by.
You know, not everybody needs to be able to design the next generation computer.
Exactly. We're going to leave that to you. So now let me speak with Peter here. Peter, you were fortunate to have colleagues who helped you in school and a company who actually hired you. Have you found that many opportunities exist now for folks with vision loss or other disabilities?
Well, you know, I came through life as one blind individual, and it's hard to know, is my experience representative or not? I suspect for some people it is not. When you hear about the difficulty that visually impaired people have of finding jobs and getting jobs, getting an education. On the other hand, we've interviewed on our show, many people on our show who are blind and have very rewarding professional careers. So I can speak only as one individual, and I have really not run into that many obstacles in my education or my career. I've found most people were generally very supportive of my aspirations and what I wanted to do at work. If I needed help doing a particular task, people were always eager and willing to jump in. And maybe part of that is how I approach my interactions with people. My blindness to me is just another aspect of my life. It's like, so I'm blind. Some people run slow. Some people can jump high. Some people can read fast. I just happen to be blind, you know, and I've always considered it kind of natural. I try to make people feel comfortable about it. As you mentioned at the beginning, you use a little bit of humor to break the ice sometimes. And I've had very few barriers to overcome in that regard.
Well, just from speaking to you, I can tell from your personality that you are that type of person who goes ahead with their life despite the situation that you found yourself in and didn't make it a focus. So therefore, you succeeded. That's my analogy.
Pete is very much of a can-do guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I always think if there's a challenge and if there's something you want to do, if you have the motivation, there are ways to work things out. I may not do certain tasks the same way other people do them, but considering that there are a variety of approaches to solving any problem, you find the one that works best for you, and you go ahead and do it. And maybe you learn some tools that you might need to accomplish the task.
Right. So, Nancy, you agree with his analysis of himself?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. So,
I mean, there are a few things that he won't do. He won't drive a car and he won't use power tools. But we've spoken with blind people who do that too and, you know, try to do it in as safe a manner as possible. And if it's something they're really motivated to keep doing, they manage to figure out a way to get it done.
Well, it's interesting what you say about driving a car. That sounds a little dangerous if you can't keep your eye on the road.
That's something I'm not willing to try. I've had several friends through the years tell me, come on, Pete, just hop in the car. We'll go in some field. We'll go in a parking lot. No problem. Let's just have fun with it. And, you know, I think too many people have seen that movie Scent of a Woman, and they think it's easy and risk-free. And yeah. Yeah. I just have never been willing to go along with that.
I'm kind of glad there are more people like you who don't want to do this. So let's talk now about the genesis of Eyes on Success. The idea for a radio show was suggested. Now, please tell our audience how you went about to create it and some of the things you feature. Like you already said, you interviewed blind professionals. Take it away, both of you.
So, conveniently, the last episode of 2021, which just aired at the end of December, we spent the entire episode talking about how we make the show. So for anybody who wants to know the nitty-gritty of everything we do, from selecting topics, finding people to interview, through doing the interview, recording the interview, processing the interview, maintaining the website, distributing the show, trust me, that filled the whole half an hour. So we're not going to go through that now. But
no, but how did you form the idea of what you were going to do?
Well, as you mentioned in the introduction, I was a volunteer reader for our local radio reading service for a couple of years. And one day, the director of the local radio reading service approached me when I was there for my regular half hour reading session. And she said, you know, between you and Pete, you know an awful lot about access technology, and you both like to talk, which I did not take as an insult.
No, that's a compliment.
Why don't you make a show? And so the original suggestion was to read items that we found in various publications and then comment on it. And the problem with that was Pete learned Braille as a kid, but he's frankly not that great of a Braille reader. So I was going to end up doing most of the talking, and he's got most of the knowledge, and we thought that wasn't the right mix. So when we first started doing the show, it was just me and Pete talking about stuff and covering a variety of topics. But after a while, we figured out that we weren't all that knowledgeable about absolutely every topic out there. So we figured there had to be other people available that we could bring onto the show and have them talk about things that were their expertise. And so, for example, we use iPhones, but if we wanted to talk about Android accessibility, we got somebody who knew about Android. And some of the access technology, we've actually brought on the developers of the access technology. Or we bring in people who've had interesting careers. Well, we did, but they did too. And so we've spoken to blind people with various successful careers. And so it's evolved into more of an interview format.
Okay, that sounds great. And that covers all of the things that I have here in my notes about what you do on your show. So that's great. That was a wonderful answer. So,
thank you.
You're welcome. Well, Peter, have you used and do you still use any devices? And could you elaborate on this most important piece of information for our listeners?
Well, I've used a variety of devices, probably almost every device you could think of throughout my education and career. As you pointed out, I was born with congenital glaucoma. I was able to hold the book just a few inches from my nose, but by the time I went to graduate school, I had some surgery that left me totally blind. So I started out early in school. I went to a school for the blind, and I learned Braille, but eventually I transitioned to a public school, and to see the blackboard, I had a little handheld telescope that I used. And then other than that, I mostly just looked very close with my nose at any piece of paper that I was using. When I went to graduate school and I lost most of my vision, it finally cleared up. I was able to use a CCTV, a closed-circuit TV system, as you pointed out. So it would blow up print with lots of contrast, probably several inches high, and I was able to do my work that way. Eventually, I started using speech synthesizers back in the early 80s. Boy, were they tough to understand. These days, they're really wonderful. And then eventually, people developed Braille displays, which was fortunate because my sight was getting worse and I couldn't use my CCTV anymore. So I used several refreshable Braille displays like the Versa Braille, if people are familiar with that, and a number of other Braille displays throughout Xerox as they'd wear out. Xerox would buy me new ones. I had one of the original Kurzweil reading machines because Xerox owned the Kurzweil system at the time. This was a $30,000 reading machine that was as big as a little washing machine that was on in my office, and it would take like 2 or 3 minutes just to read a page and get most of it wrong. These days, I use an app called Seeing AI or KNFB Reader, and some of these are free apps that'll just snap a picture of something with your phone and read it back to you. So it's incredible to see how far that technology has come along.
Well, that is amazing. Is there something that Apple developed?
I use the iPhone, and you know, the iPhone is very accessible to people with vision problems. If you're low vision, they have magnification and zoom built in. You can change the color of the display if you're sensitive to different colors and different contrasts. But I use the voice features, voiceover. You know, similar capabilities are also available in Android phones these days. But everything on my phone talks to me. I can do anything that any sighted person can do on the phone. The internet, my email, calendars, et cetera. And as I said, the phone has extra capabilities, being able to point your camera at a document and have it automatically read it back to you. These days on the iPhone, you can point your camera in a room and it will describe what's in the room. There's a desk, there's a chair, there's a bookshelf, which is an amazing capability if you think of it for blind people.
It is amazing. It is amazing. Well, every year.
And you know, even for somebody like me, I've got really good distance vision now that I've had my cataracts fixed. But the same thing that caused me to have cataracts made me old enough so I need reading glasses, but I don't need vision glasses. So I will sometimes go out without glasses, and then I have to read a menu. Well, I've always got my telephone with me. I can use the flashlight to get extra lighting on whatever I'm trying to read. That's a big help. I can use the camera app or the magnifying glass app and magnify what I'm trying to read. And so even for people who don't consider themselves visually impaired, and I certainly do not, these smartphones have capabilities that make it easier for everybody.
So 25 years ago, a lot of this did not exist. So it's the miracle of technology that is making life easier for people with, whether it's blindness or other disabilities. I've seen someone in a wheelchair who can adjust the television from the wheelchair, who can adjust the temperature in a room from the wheelchair. These are amazing accomplishments that are due to technology.
Yeah.
So,
and I want to point out that as much as I enjoy technology and I believe technology is helpful, particularly for people who have some kind of impairment, there are a lot of low-tech solutions. Many people are afraid of technology. I use rubber bands on pill bottles to identify them. I locate things in different parts of the house. We put little dots. It's not even Braille, just a dot on our washing machine so I know where to turn the dial to start the wash. So there are many low-tech solutions that, if people think about it, can be very helpful in their daily lives.
Well, I'm glad you were able to share that with our listeners. So there's an app called Project Guideline that recently aired on your show, and I think it helps people to take a hike or take a walk by themselves. Is that true?
So this is actually something that's still in the development phase. It's a project out of Google where they strap a camera to the front of a person, and using software that Google developed, and a line painted on the ground, it tells the person who can't see whether they're to the right of the line or the left of the line, and the first guy who tried to use that in a demonstration mode was Thomas Panek, who's the, I think he's the executive director of Guiding Eyes for the Blind. And he's totally blind and he's an avid athlete and he runs with all sorts of different technology, but he took off like a shot with this thing and he was really happy. You know, so it's not ready to be a product yet, but it's something that's very promising.
Okay. Well, we're dwindling down in time, so I want to give Peter an opportunity to impart to a newly blind person some particular thought that you might want to share. And we're coming close to the end of the program, so go ahead, Peter.
Well, part of the point of our show, Eyes on Success, is that anything is possible. And over the years, we've had many shows that talk with people who have done things that you might consider to be impossible if you're visually impaired. And right now we have over 500 episodes in our searchable archive. If you use our search tool to search for things like navigation, hiking, knitting, blind, just put some of those terms into the search field and you'll find those shows. And maybe you'll get some encouragement and some motivation to figure out how to do something that you want to do.
Other topics that we frequently cover are education, employment, extreme sports, anything you're interested in. And you can find all of that at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
Say it again.
www.eyesonsuccess.net.
Great. We have.
And from there, you can find links to the rest of our web presence.
Okay. We have 1 minute left. I just want to compliment you because your lives have been successful and they define you. But just a short comment on passion. Nancy.
Well, I mean, I think you could kind of hear that in both of our voices. We get really excited talking to people about the show. And one of the most gratifying things is being able to connect people with the information that they need. And just the other day, we were talking to somebody, and he says, oh, my wife has this visual issue. And, you know, largely because of the show, we were knowledgeable about tools that she might be able to use to improve her situation.
Well, we've run out of time for this month's episode of Community Connections. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Sonia Usach-Kuhn for the North Carolina Reading Service. Community Connections is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Community Connections, please call 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to North Carolina Reading Service.